This is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the art of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
Welcome back to my conversation with Christy Pambianchi, the Executive Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer at Verizon. Christy, in part one, we talked about your impressive career track at Pepsi, Corning, and now Verizon. But I want to talk about what's next for Christy Pambianchi. You clearly have a sense of responsibility to open the doors for the next generation of women and breaking down the barriers for whoever comes next. Where did that drive and motivation come from?
So I am one of four girls. I'm the oldest of four, and I have three sisters. And my mom passed when we were very young. I was 11. And we also had the good fortune of my father's sister and mother living with us. And so while we were suffering from the devastating loss of my mom at such a young age, we were surrounded by, and we had each other, and we had obviously the love of our dad, but you know, we were largely a group of women that supported him and each other to get through those really hard times and come out landing on our feet. And so that's how I knew women. And when I went to college, I had a great cohort of girlfriends at college, and many of my classmates were really amazing, interesting, competent people that have gone on to do amazing things. And when I started working, there were first less than 10% women in the professional ranks of the company at the time. And there was a prevailing view that women were going to compete with each other and put each other down to get ahead. And I found both of those things troubling for a variety of reasons. One, I was unexpecting of the low participation rate of women that I mentioned. I remember being 22 and going to my first field assignment, and I was the HR representative for six locations. And it was about 600 employees across six locations, three labor contracts. And I was the only exempt payroll, meaning the only woman in management for all six locations.
Wow.
And there was one woman at each facility who was she had usually three or four jobs. She was the receptionist, the front clerk in the door, and also the cashier at night, and maybe also dispatcher. That was shocking to me. So you have no peer group. And it was 1991, and you just thought, wow, I just didn't expect it. So it was such a shock. And then in 1994 or 95, maybe 93, they decided they had a group meeting of all of the women in upper management or middle management. And so maybe there was like 50 of us that got together. And that was like sent a shockwave through the company, and all the men wanted to know, what are all the women doing getting together talking about us? And much of the research shows, and I really feel for the generation that was just a few years ahead of me, five plus years ahead of me, they were the first, and it was super hard for them. And they're, you know, it was sort of almost like a compliance, like, well, I guess we have to have one woman on the team. So there'd be one woman. And it created this idea that you had to compete with each other to be the one woman in that spot. So that really stuck with me, and it really bothered me. And I think one of the ways that women have been held back as a cohort in society, in work, and in other areas that we haven't advanced to our fullest potential in the world is by being divided and constantly put into buckets. Like, are you a working mom or a stay-at-home mom? Are you a woman that decided to have children or not have children? Are you a woman that is doing this versus that? Are you pro this political issue or against this political issue? And so it's just this constant bucketing and dividing. And so I have had this firmly held belief that if we all act together, number one, we'll make more progress as a constituency. And two, I just knew from my life experience that the support of women around me and that strength that I've been able to draw from that, and the women that I help or the women that have helped me, I believed it was really important that we strike down that stereotype. It's still propagated today a lot in the media constantly. That whether it's mean girls or women won't help each other, et cetera, et cetera. And I find that, first of all, offensive, second, not true. And third, it's holding women back. And so I've done work with a lot of women's groups. I just gave a talk this week at a group called Fund for Women, which is a community-based organization in Corning where women put money in to have a fund that women can solicit from when they're in need of assistance. It now raised over $1 million and they're granting over $100,000 a year to women in the community. Wow. I started a professional women's group called Up To, where we had the tag phrase that it was up to us to mm-hmm. develop and foster the next generation of women to take our spots and then continue on the journey. Just like if I was in a relay race and I was going to hand the baton, I've run it this far and I want to make sure there's someone behind me that's going to grab that baton and go even farther than I could and do better than myself and my cohort of women leaders have done. And I think it's upon us to set that tone and change that view of what women are capable of. And the power of women collectively is amazing. And I've had phenomenal professional experience with women peers, with women mentors, and with women in society. And so I feel very passionate about being a leader and a voice for changing that norm.
Well, and thank you for being that. And it certainly is all that hard work and determination is definitely paying off for you, Christy, and for all of us that are surrounded by you. I know that Verizon was recognized by many, many organizations, including Forbes, as a 2020 Best Employer for Women. So congratulations to you and your team for what you've accomplished. And thanks for sharing your early story, too.
Thank you.
So let's talk about our younger generation then. You wrote a beautiful letter to your daughter, Sarah, on International Day of the Girl last year. And I believe Sarah was a senior in high school.
Yes, correct.
So I have a daughter too. And, you know, the lessons that you shared, I feel, are just so spot on for women today. And so I have the article here, and I'm just going to share a few of the lessons that you call out here. But, you know, the first one is to embrace your resiliency. And, you know, as women, we need to be prepared to pivot and shift and stay out in front. And I love break the rules, and of course, not to do that for our children at home, but rules were meant to be broken. And I love the reminding us about Katherine Johnson's mathematical genius, and also to recognize your privilege and to be mindful of that privilege and to be fearless and, you know, to really retire that fear and embrace the opportunity. But this one was really poignant, find joy inside the hardship. And, you know, nothing will cancel out our ability to be kind and find joy in the most unlikely places. And I think we have certainly all experienced that firsthand just in the last 16 months. But as you were writing this letter to Sarah and reflecting on these lessons that you were sharing, if you were to pick one of those lessons, which one would you share with your 18-year-old self?
I think I might have wanted to tell my 18-year-old self that it was okay to break the rules. I don't think I was aware of that at 18. I probably got much more closer to like 35 to 40 before I fully felt safe doing that. And I've always been really optimistic because I had so much hardship when I was young. And so the piece that would have been, I'd probably want to tell my 18-year-old self is it's okay to break the rules, trust your instinct a little bit and do it in the right way, but challenge norms.
Yeah, I don't think I would have known that at 18 either. The one that stood out for me was the recognize your privilege. And again, how that the pandemic has made us more aware of the disparities that are caused by the systemic injustices and prejudices. And I don't think a lot of that stuff was really called out when I was 18 years old. And I know that that's what's really driving many companies that were not seeing the importance. I mean, they recognize the importance of diversity and inclusivity, but I think that, you know, like my firm, for example, is getting many, many more inquiries to recruit for a head of diversity, equity, inclusion. And I know that Verizon has been, again, one of the leaders in that space under your leadership too. I want to talk a little bit about this People Plus Work Connect. As the pandemic again was rearing its evil head, you joined forces with some other CHROs from Accenture and Lincoln Financial Group and ServiceNow to launch this People Plus Work Connect. And I happened to be on that first call. And I thought that the coalition that you all were pulling together was just genius. And again, I think it gets back to you, how your DNA about working together and moving things forward. But can you tell us a little bit about what this coalition's mission is?
So People Plus Work Connect, first, thank you for joining that first call. We launched People Plus Work Connect as a platform for the HR community to connect with one another, to be able to take the friction out of movement in the labor force. And there was, at the outset of the pandemic, an extreme response to society closing and the shelter-in-place orders, and literally millions of people unemployed overnight. And yet there were some bright lights. There were some companies hiring. Mm-hmm. The HR community was beginning to have calls. I was receiving emails saying, hey, are you hiring? I'm laying off 50,000 people, et cetera, et cetera. And so a few of us that had tenure as heads of HR, we'd lived through the financial crisis and other things, said, hey, we got to do more than just share best practices on what we're doing on pandemic policies, et cetera. We need to create a place where we can very quickly connect and do what we can to get our impacted employees or our job opportunities known to one another's organizations or markets as quickly as possible. So we as an HR community can both enable ourselves to be more effective in our role and at the same time serve society by doing everything we can to reduce the negative fallout of COVID on unemployment levels. And that was really the premise. And that's what we set out to do. And we're so proud of what we've been able to do and the response from the HR community of having that kind of platform available to network among themselves and create microsites and link directly into members on the platform who have either massive hiring opportunities or may have unfortunately had to lay off or furlough workers.
So now we've got the war for talent, right? Companies can't find enough people. So is the group addressing that issue today?
So what we've just celebrated the 1 year anniversary a few short weeks ago. And what we have done is chart a new focus for the second year of People Plus Work Connect. And we really recognize that while the economy is rapidly recovering and jobs are coming back on, back to your comment on privilege and diversity and inclusion, all groups aren't participating equally. And in particular, mm-hmm. people of color and women, jobs were disproportionately reduced at the outset of the pandemic, and they haven't come back at the same rates. And so we've continued to keep the platform up and running, and we're adding additional emphasis and focus on what do we have to do to help reach and keep active so that we can erase the effects of the she session, and also where there's been job loss in job categories that had high participation rates of people of color that haven't returned.
So if people are interested in learning more about People Plus Work Connect, how can they get that information?
They can go to peopleplusworkconnect.com, and there'll be information and links there to get more information about the platform.
Great, great. Well, I also saw that on LinkedIn that you have a little over 3,000 open positions at Verizon.
We do.
So is Verizon going to be bringing people back to the office, or will they allow them to continue to work remotely?
We have three types of roles. We have roles that have to be done on site. We have roles that we've decided and communicated already to our employees will be permanently work from home assignments. And we have roles that will be hybrid. And we are, over the course of this July to October 1st timeframe, phasing in our hybrid work organization. There's four waves, and there's about 10 to 15,000 people in each wave. And there's 4 weeks of training and working among teams on what their schedules are going to be, publishing their schedules and getting back into the hang of coming into some type of office arrangement on some schedule based on the nature of the work. And so we're very excited about it. We call it Work Forward. And we're taking everything we learned during the pandemic and we're casting that forward towards our five-year vision that we had of really transforming the ways of working at Verizon when we launched Verizon 2.0 at the beginning of 2019. So for us, it's been very exciting. And for our folks that are working on site, our retail employees, our field technicians, folks building the networks, we've been working with them as well throughout the pandemic on more advancements and innovations that they help create for how to conduct business in the environment of the pandemic, whether it was touchless retail or different ways of managing service calls. And we're keeping a lot of those innovations going forward because they were so successful.
Interesting. So are there new skills or competencies that you're looking for in an employee that will be in this hybrid environment for you?
Yes. So for our leaders, we want to really make sure that we have skilled and trained them for how to manage a distributed workforce. And while people have been successful throughout the pandemic, sometimes you can sort of do something because you have to for a period of time, hold your breath, you know, adapt some new ways of working, thinking it's just temporary. But now that we've leaned in, that we want to learn how to operate this way more permanently, we have 6 training modules for our leaders that cover everything from how to manage a distributed team to how to work with all of the new tools that we have available, how to think about setting work schedules. And for the individual employees, we've built training for them as well about what does it mean to be a hybrid employee and what are work expectations, how and what are the factors that are going to weigh into what kind of schedules people have. And so we're treating this just like anything else. It's a new set of skills, and we don't want to just assume that it's an extension of how we used to manage before.
So are you finding that there's a wider talent net that can be cast because of remote workers or the, you know, hybrid workers?
I think that's one of the advantages. If you decouple work from physical location, it opens up a lot of other possibilities for people to access work and for companies to find workers. So I think it's really a positive for both people seeking work and for employers. There are obviously some jobs that have to be done on site in a lot of industries, but this the fact that now there'll be a huge group of jobs that can be done anywhere, I think is really exciting and probably one of the biggest innovations in the world of work in my lifetime.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's funny because I have always run a remote business. My employees have always worked remotely. So when the transition to having to work home was just sort of another day for the rest of us, except that we had children or spouses that were sitting there at the lunch table with us. I'm curious, from a recruiting perspective, if you are familiar with recruitment research. And one of the things in the book that I discuss is the importance of having that perfect pitch. Not from a singing perspective, but, you know, from the storytelling perspective. And you're in a highly, highly competitive space. Why should a candidate consider leaving maybe one of your competitors and considering Verizon? What's the perfect pitch?
First, I love the theory and the concepts that you have put together. And I do believe heavily in storytelling. And for me, one of the things I really believe is in purpose and mission. And I think, so the first thing we'll talk about when we look to either recruit new employees or talk to and what I call re-recruit our existing employees every day is what's the purpose and the mission of Verizon? And, you know, we simplify that to say we deliver the networks that move the world forward, right? We're connecting people. We're helping advance the world. If that excites you, let's talk further. So I think the very first step is, are people excited about the mission of the company? If that's a good thing, then keep going. Next, we'd like to talk to prospective candidates about our values and the ways in which we work. And if those feel compatible with your values as an individual, keep going. And then we like to get into the ways and what kind of jobs we have, et cetera. We never really just start with this is the job, et cetera. And I think it has to be what's the mission and the purpose of the company, what's the values and the ways of working. And the next part will be, if you're not excited about those two things, probably not a good fit. Stop there, you know, and if you are, keep going and learn more about the how, the team structure, movement, the work, et cetera, the leader. So that's sort of how we think about talking with candidates. We developed a really refreshed employee value proposition that was tied to our new mission and purpose statement. And I actually partnered with the chief marketing officer and had them talk to prospective employees, recently hired employees, people that didn't work for us that were considering, and really tried to take an outside in look at making sure we had a sharp and current employee value proposition.
Well, your passion and your voice sold me. So I hope that there, if there's anyone listening that is considering Verizon, I think that this is a great place to consider. I have a few last questions for you, Christy, just some fun questions that we call it our special lightning round. You mentioned that your first job was as a lifeguard, right? I'm curious, what's your dream job?
My dream job would be to be like the lead singer in a rock band, if I could just do something super fun.
Pat Benatar?
Yeah.
Okay, and then here's the age-old question, M&M or Skittles?
Oh, definitely M&M. Chocoholic.
Amen. Well, Christy, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you today, and I look forward to continuing to follow you on LinkedIn and enjoying the articles that you've been writing. They have been very insightful. I appreciate all that you're doing for the HR community and especially for our young women moving forward.
Thank you so much for having me with you today.
Her name is Christy Pambianchi, the Executive Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer at Verizon. And that's it for this episode of Revolutionizing Recruitment. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you'll automatically get my new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love if you left us a review so more folks like yourself can discover the show. Until next time, take care.
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.